Now we come to an important point. What is the notion of responsibility in a given society? In all of the traditional societies, the notion is that the individual should accept without question the moral order of the group. Deviants, dropouts, cannot be tolerated. When you read of the Australian rights of the Arunta and so forth, the little boy in the initiation ceremonies who can't do what he's told to do, who doesn't do what he's told to do, who is impudent, is killed and eaten. This is perhaps the best answer ever rendered for the juvenile delinquent. These are serious societies. They cannot tolerate deviance. When you turn to the Oriental systems and read the law books, the Manavadharma Shastra, the laws of Manu of India, for example, you can't believe it. What's done to people who don't follow the rules. In the Chinese Shuta, the book of the Art of War, is declared for small faults, great penalties. Then there will be no great faults. These societies are up against a survival problem. And the individual who is initiated into the social order must be initiated in such a way that his spontaneous responses will be in accord with the needs of that society. He is being, and here's an important point, he is being shaped into a shape that will be that of that society. He's being trimmed and cut into being an organ of a certain organism. And no independent thoughts, please. As a result, in the Orient to this day, when one is teaching or lecturing Oriental students, the experience is absolutely incredible. For an Occidental, the students take it in. The principal virtue of a student is, in Sanskrit, called Shraddha, namely absolute faith in his teacher. Now, some of your teachers may feel a little bit annoyed by the criticism that comes from you with your independent judgments, darn you. But if he were to be dealing with one of these situations where everything's taken in, you think, holy God, I'm the law and the prophets and everything else. You don't want that either. The Indian idea, for example, of the guru is of ones whose authority is absolute. The shishya, the student, simply receives it absolutely. Let me tell you a little anecdote, an Indian anecdote about the guru. There's a story of a student who arrived late one day to his guru. And the guru says, well, you're late. Where you been? I said, I live the other side of the river. The river is in flood. I couldn't ford at the usual fording place. There's no bridge. There's no boat. I couldn't get here. I said, the guru, you're here. How did you get here? Did the boat come? No. Did the flood go down? No. I simply thought, my guru is my divine revelation. He is my God. I'll simply think, meditate on my guru, and I'll walk across the water. So I said, guru, guru, guru. And I'm here. Well, thought the guru, I didn't know this about myself. So this bugged him, and he couldn't get it out of his mind. So when the student had gone, he kept thinking, yeah. So finally thought, I've got to try this. So he goes down to the riverside, looks to see that nobody is observing this experiment. I. And he drowned. The only reason he was a guru was that he, so to say, wasn't there. He's an absolutely perfect pane of glass through which the light of what he had been taught shines. And his guru likewise, and his back of that likewise. So, this wisdom, this law that comes through the guru, comes from ages. It has nothing to do with this moment here and now.